The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
If you want to follow what's going on around the world, if you want to get a newsletter that tells you what's going on, it's called the Alpha Investor Letter. And we are pleased today to have Nicholas Vardy with us. Nicholas is the creator of that newsletter, as well as the editor of Bull Market Alert, Triple Digit Trader, which is a high-end, fast-paced trading service that's focused on making short-term profits all around the world in the hottest market. And then he has the Global Guru, which is a free electronic newsletter that kind of helps you uncover some of the opportunities around the world. But this man is truly an expert of what's going on around the world, and we're very honored to have him with us this morning. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for being on. Well, I guess, first of all, what are your thoughts about the world in general? You know, there's constant talk about China. Greece is still hanging out there a little bit. Now we've got Puerto Rico, a protectorate of the United States. What do you think about the world in general?
Well, look, I mean, you know, it's one of those situations where there's a lot of uncertainty out there. Obviously, the Greek situation was one that has been rearing its ugly head for close to half a decade now. That looks like the current chapter has been kind of settled, though, you know, the Greek stock market opened on Monday and it actually fell about, I think 30% at the open, ended up being down about 16 or 18%. So there's a lot of volatility there. And then, of course, there's the issue with China. You know, the Chinese stock market has pulled back, substantially, probably by about a third in that sort of highly retail, local retail driven market. And so in terms of market sentiment, lots of negativity out there. I guess the question is, the question that a U.S. investor has to ask him or herself is, how much does this really impact what goes on for U.S. investors? To put some things in perspective, I mean, Greece, for example, constitutes less than 2% of the EU economy, so it's actually a very tiny portion of Europe's economy. You know, what kind of impact does it have on your portfolio as a U.S. investor? Probably not very much. The Chinese stock market is very much driven by local investors, local retail investors in a very immature, callow environment, people who are very subject to kind of stock market manias. You know, how much does that really impact U.S. investors? And obviously, I think the slowdown in the Chinese economy will impact people more. But I think if I would have to, you know, make a kind of judgment call on it, I think there's a tendency to overreact a little bit in terms of what impact it has on your average U.S. investor's portfolio.
Well, you've obviously been reading Lazzo Barini lately. I guess you probably saw that he yesterday came out and said that he thought that the S&P would reach 3,200 by the end of 2017, and he basically said the same thing. You know, you can just ignore all this other stuff that goes on, but, you know, so much has been talked about with China, who is kind of one of – it's certainly an 800-pound gorilla, and you wrote a very interesting article in June called Why Bill Gross is Both Right or Wrong About China. And I guess I'm going to ask you the same question that you asked at the beginning of that article. Is China in a bubble?
Well, look, I mean, in that article, I pointed out, a couple of things, and I think it kind of reflects, you know, what I've already just mentioned. I mean, the real bubble in China was in the local tech market, specifically in the Shenzhen market. And Shenzhen's this part of China, which is right outside Hong Kong. And that's where you had kind of, you know, these NASDAQ-style PE, Thai tech stocks, you know, trading at PEs of 145. There's actually a U.S. ETF, which traded on that on that exchange, and there you definitely saw a big bubble, because if a market is trading at, you know, an average P of 145, there is trouble ahead. And I think that was the sort of part of the article where I said, well, that's where Bill Gross is right about China, that it is overly inflated. Now, that said, a lot of the mainstream Chinese stocks, which are traded in kind of the mainstream exchange traded fund FXI, never really got that expensive. I don't know if it's now back to single digits or not, but it was really, you know, trading, even at the peak, it was trading at a P of like 12 or 13, figure dropped 20-30%. It's probably trading at about a P of 10 now. Now, that isn't outrageously expensive. The challenge there, of course, is that 4 to 5 out of those top 10 stocks are Chinese financials, whose you know, financials are, own financial statements are very much subject to question. They probably have a lot more bad loans than people think. And I think the, you know, the real impact in terms of, you know, on your portfolio as a U.S. investor in China is going to be, you know, this, the kind of how the slowdown in the economy is going to impact sales of luxury goods, sales of Apple iPhones, sales of stuff that the U.S. companies that are still operating there, you know, are going to be, you know, aren't their sales that they're not making because of this, the slowdown in the market. So, you know, so I think, so to summarize, I think there was very much a bubble in the tech area in that one particular exchange, the Shenzhen exchange, that sold off sharply. You know, the other the main market has sold off sharply as well, but, you know, that was never in that much of a bubble.
Now, Nick, I know you trade around the world. Does it concern you about what the Chinese government has done lately in that market, where they've actually gone in and really manipulated the markets? You know, you can't trade, you can't short, all these rules and restrictions they put on.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's you know, I read a statistic, and I can't recall it exactly, but something like, you know, only, you know, when the market bottomed or something, only like 12 or 13 major stocks are still trading. All the other ones, they'd essentially frozen up through various, you know, administrative measures. I mean, look, you know, that's going to be the classic impulse of a centrally planned economy, is they're going to try to control what's going on, and they do it through telling brokerages and banks and financial institutions to go in and buy. They're doing it by making shorting illegal. They're doing it by pulling back on margin lending. You know, they're using all these administrative measures to try to keep the market afloat, and it's a classic thing that they're incredibly frustrated that the market just might be more powerful and bigger than the Chinese mandarins themselves. And, you know, if you look at the value of the kind of paper economic wealth that was that disappeared, I mean, it was like $3 trillion, which is, you know, here in the UK and London where I am, that meant that would have meant that the every single stock on the London Stock Exchange would have gone to zero. That's how much wealth, you know, evaporated into, you know, thin air. And you know, clearly they were unable to, you know, completely stop that. Will they be successful? You know, I don't know. I mean, I think the only thing that's really going to change that is less the administrative impetus behind all these measures that they're taking. It's going to be more a shift in market sentiment where people are going to say, you know what, this Chinese bank is now trading so cheaply that I'm actually going to go in there and hopefully, you know, I have a right to buy it and it's not kind of frozen by the authorities.
Now, do you think the authorities are going to loosen up up there? I know, you know, they want to get the yuan and, or yuan, how do you pronounce that anyway? Nick, you're an international expert. How do you pronounce the Chinese currency?
I would pronounce it yuan, and then there's, you know, there's a renminbi. There's another name for it. There's a couple names floating out, but I'd say the Chinese yuan.
Okay, I can do yuan. All right. So, you know, because they want it to be a reserve currency, and the IMF has come out and said, hey, you guys have got to make yourself more open. You've got to do a couple of things to become part of the reserve currency. Do you think that that they'll accomplish that?
You know, I think, you know, it's a question of time. So the short answer is, you know, yes. If, you know, we get back to get on this call in 2035, we'll say, oh, yes, you know, this is what would happen. Now, I think what the government has done with the stock market has certainly lost some credibility in the eyes of people like the MSCI Emerging Markets Index. You know, the Chinese stocks were going to be included in that, you know, a month or two ago. They weren't. And clearly because it's not a freely trading market, and, you know, that was proven, you know, over the past couple of weeks, even more so than before, that's gonna put a damper on that. You know, the IMF, issue, it's kind of a technical issue. There's something called SDR, special drawing rights in the IMF.
Hey, Nick, can I interrupt you just a second? Because you're going to go on a break. We'll cover a little bit when we come back.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We have got a tremendous guest with us today. His name is Nicholas Vardy. Nicholas, now there's a lot of ways you can connect with Nicholas. I'm going to let him tell you in just a few moments. But let me give you an idea. I was reading this, and I was just in awe of this man's background. First of all, he went to Stanford, graduated with honors and distinction in both economics and history. Then he earned an MA in modern European intellectual history, which I have no idea what that degree is. He won a Fulbright scholarship. He's got a JD degree from Harvard Law School, where he was the editor of the Harvard International Law Journal. He's a certified financial analyst, and he's just one really bright person. And he's the smartest guy we know of in investing internationally. So we are pleased this morning. And he's calling in from his, I guess his home is in London. Are you in London?
Yes,
so,
I am.
Yep, he's calling in from London this morning. Nick, I'll tell you what, tell them how they can get a hold of your services, if you would, please.
Sure. If you go to the website nicholasvardy.com, N-I-C-H-O-L-A-S-V-A-R-D-Y, .com, you'll see that's my website, which is done by Eagle Publishing, which is the publisher of my newsletters. And there you can get information on any of the newsletters that I edit. Let me just highlight a couple of them. There's one called the Alpha Investor Letter, which you had mentioned, which is basically a monthly newsletter, which basically is almost like an educational newsletter to make people in the U.S. aware of different opportunities, you know, both in the U.S. and abroad. And it really highlights a lot of, the type of investment picks or stock recommendations that you really wouldn't hear of otherwise. I also have a couple of shorter-term trading services, one called the Bull Market Alert, which is based on kind of the expectation of making profits in over a 4 to 8 week period based on short-term stock movements. And if you just want to get a sense of my thinking on a different level, then you can subscribe to a free e-letter called The Global Guru, which is a free e-letter that goes out on Tuesdays, which discusses a lot of different areas of both global and domestic investing. So I think if you subscribe to The Global Guru, which has about 120,000 subscribers now, you'll get a good overview of kind of my thinking, and then you can maybe move on to some other newsletters as well from there.
And knowing his thinking is really worthwhile. And I ask him offline, folks, a question I have never asked any of our guests before, and he gave me such a great answer. I ask him whether or not getting newsletters was worthwhile, whether or not you could actually act upon something that you're going to get from the newsletters. And Nick's initial response on the newsletters is the big newsletters, like the Alpha Investor Letters, to kind of give you an idea of trends and opportunities, areas that you might want to look. But you said that you gave a great answer, Nick, on terms of your trading services. Can you repeat that for us, please?
Sure, yeah. My question was, can you really make, money on a short-term basis? Can I get the information out to my subscribers quickly enough? And I told him yes. And a lot of this is, HISC has kind of a short-term technical analysis overlay, which I know is a dirty word for investors. But in terms of getting into certain positions on a short-term level, if you look at some of the technical indicators out there in terms of what's overbought or oversold, they really do help you put the odds in your favor in terms of making money over the short term. Couple that with some call option recommendations for some of the more aggressive subscribers. And you can make some very good money over a short period of time.
That's good. All right. I'm in this segment. I'd like to ask you. I'll get off China, and I'd like to ask you where you see opportunities, because you had a huge sell-off in the Russian market. I think that that's beginning to turn around. And, of course, there's a lot of talk this morning about Greece. Is Greece a great buy? The banks were down limit again this in trading. This morning down 30%, and I understand they began to turn a little bit at the end. Where do you see bargains around the world?
Look, I mean, I think bargains are really to be found in those places that people hate the most. And I think you mentioned two of those places right here, both Russia and Greece. And I think that, there are, opportunities in both of those markets. Greece, simply because it's so oversold. And, like John Templeton, the famous international investor, he said, people always ask me where the outlook is the best. And I asked him, he said, they're asking me the wrong question. They should ask where the outlook is the worst, because that's where you're going to get bargains. I think, there are, obviously Greece is a very cheap market. Russia is a cheap market. That's highly correlated to the price of oil. Russia's always like the most hated market in the world, whether it's doing well or whether it's doing poorly. And I'll give you an interesting statistic. Actually, Russia is among the 46 markets that I follow on a daily basis. Russia is actually number six this year, and it's up 13.4%, for all its volatility. And you know, there's actually a very interesting exchange-traded fund by the ticker symbol is GVAL, Global Value, run by Cambria Investments, which invests in the 10 cheapest global stock markets as measured by Robert Shiller's cyclically adjusted price-earnings ratio, which is basically a 10-year trailing P/E
right.
ratio. And invest in the cheapest markets in the world. They're markets that you probably don't want to look at what those markets are because you'll be like, oh, my God, do I really want to put my money there? But if you look at sort of the historical data and if you can just sort of buy that and put it away and not look at it, there's a very good there's also very good reasons to suggest that that's going to do a lot better than the U.S. market, which under that same measure is the number three most expensive market in the world. Only Denmark and now Japan is ahead of the U.S. in terms of that 10-year ratio. And so I think, you know, the biggest opportunities are in these very cheap markets. And it's, you know, when markets are as expensive as the U.S. and Japan, it's tougher to make money in those markets simply because you're paying a high price.
I was going to ask you, in fact, whether or not you saw any opportunities in the United States market. You wrote a great article called "Here's What's Making Money in This Lousy
yeah.
Market" just a couple of weeks ago. I don't even know if I have enough time to even ask you as many questions as I want from that. But you see opportunity here in the U.S.? Are we just the prettiest girl to dance and that's it?
You know, look, I mean, I think the U.S. is very much there are certain sectors in the U.S. that are doing well. I still remain very bullish on biotechnology. You know, that's I'm getting a little bit worried about it because it's starting to be too much in the headlines, and that's always a bad sign. But you know, some of the major biotechnology companies have been performing very, very strongly over the last 2, 3, 4 years. They flattened out over the last 3 or 4 months, as have all U.S. stocks. But I think there's still some tremendous opportunity there. I mean, just today, looking at the headlines in the Wall Street Journal Europe here, I see that the Irish company Shire just put in a $30 billion bid for a U.S. spinoff called Baxter, which just spun off. I think it's based in Illinois. There's a lot of premiums being paid for these biotechnology merger situations.
Right.
It oftentimes is a sign of a top, but it shows you that there's a lot of activity in the sector. And certainly if you look at the mainstream kind of indices, those biotech has done very, very well this year.
Nick, thank you so much for being with us and for sharing your knowledge. We really appreciate it. We'll hope you'll come back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Have a great day, sir.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.